Welcome to FTSE Russell Convenes. I'm David Sol, Head of Policy at FTSE Russell, and today we're talking to Professor Alberto Rossi from Georgetown University. Follow us on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast. Alberto, welcome. Great speaking with you. You're a professor of finance at Georgetown University. You're also the director of AI Analytics and the Future of Work Initiative, and soon to be a senior resident at the Brookings Institute, so congratulations with that. You've published an awful lot on machine learning, robo-advisory, and fintech. What is actually robo-advisory, and what does it actually mean for the financial services market?
So we really define robo-advisory as any sort of advice that is generated by an algorithm, and then that is tailored to clients' characteristics. And these kind of robo-advisory services became popular. I mean, quite frankly, there were kind of initial forms of robo-advice already in the 90s and early 2000s, but they became more and more popular after the financial crisis around 2011, 2012, and so on and so forth. And, you know, there is a great promises for these tools. We know that a lot of the population is cut out of financial services or human financial advice when it comes to investing in their own portfolio, because human financial advisors have what we call an opportunity cost of time. They will want to cater to investors that have a lot of assets under management. And so through automation, you can imagine that you can not only improve the type of advice that you give to individual investors, but you can also expand dramatically the number of people that
so can, reaching more people at a lower cost.
Exactly, which is what we generally define kind of financial inclusion aspect of robo-advisory. That's what kind of excites me the most about robo-advisory services.
And what is it that your research looks at in robo-advisories particularly?
So most of the work we do is trying to understand, first of all, what are the effects of robo-advisory services on investors' portfolio allocation? So how do their portfolio changes? How we can reduce some of their mistakes that people make? For example, one of the typical mistakes that American investors, retail investors tend to do is to be overly exposed to U.S. equities, so something that we call home bias puzzle. And robo-advisors are particularly good at exposing investors through ETFs through international markets.
So more globally and more diversified.
More diversified portfolio. So the reduction in risk is one of the crucial aspects. And then other aspects that I study in when it comes to robo-advisors is trying to understand, for example, what is the optimal way of providing robo-advice, right? One thing that we know is that you can have very good forms or very good algorithms advising individuals, but if they don't trust them, of course, it's going to be all done for nothing, right? So in many cases, you have that asset managers have started to develop kind of hybrid forms of advice, where you have that some of the tasks are delegated to the algorithms, and some of the tasks instead are still retained by a human financial advisor. So effectively, you have that these algorithms are there to empower the human financial advisor in the sense that it allows them to, first of all, become more effective, kind of cater to more clients, and so reduce the cost of providing it.
So you believe that there's an ideal combination of both human engagement as well as robo-advisory to instill trust. Is that the best way of going about it?
Well, right now, I would say yes. A lot of the forms of robo-advisory services that have been deployed kind of use this hybrid structure, and this hybrid structure has been particularly effective. We have some research showing that the quality or the amount of interactions between the human and the client really affects how much trust the individual clients have in the algorithm. Allows asset managers to retain more customers during market downturns, which is usually typically the time where a lot of clients tend to kind of quit robo-advisory services. But of course, this is a very dynamically kind of evolving space. You have that large language models are coming into play. You have that the humanization of some of these chatbots is potentially can create or help instill trust. It remains to be seen how much we're going to be able to introduce these new technologies when it comes to robo-advisory services.
Can we switch, Alberto, to other piece of research? Very interesting what you've done in machine learning. And it makes me think about my time as a portfolio manager and an analyst doing fundamental analysis, trying to understand companies, looking at the cash flows, price earnings ratios, to somehow come up with or a way of differentiating good companies from maybe not so good companies. You've looked at signals and looked at more than 18,000 different signals. So tell me a bit about that research.
The way we created them was just to, by effectively thinking about how a fundamental investor would have done, which is basically going parsing through all the financial reports and construct and the, all the accounting information related to all those companies and try to come up with all the possible kind of accounting ratios.
So price earnings ratio, book momentum, market, book to market, and so on. And so then 18,000 of
exactly,
them.
Exactly, yeah.
For which you definitely need AI.
It starts becoming relatively heavy from a computational perspective. Yeah. Some of the models we train took almost 30 days. On 1,000 cores, so like it's like having 1,000 of your MacBook Pros next to each other, crunching the numbers for almost a month.
And you looked at financial data over several decades.
Yeah.
Trained those signals, 18,000 signals. What was it telling you? What were the insights from?
So the point of our work was the following, is that what we have seen is that over the last couple of years, a lot of researchers, a lot of asset managers have started to use these kind of signals that were popularized over the past couple of decades, like book to market, dividend price ratio, or momentum. These were all signals that people have discovered to be useful in the past. And so if you start using those signals and you feed them into a machine learning model, you're kind of cheating, right? Because you basically are exploiting information that you would not have known were you an investor
selection
manager.
Selection bias.
Exactly. You have a selection and a look-ahead bias. So these prior studies show phenomenal performance. You have like annual returns of 60%, effectively like printing money almost. But then what we said is like, look, if you really want to take this seriously, you have to go back and kind of pretend you didn't know and you didn't have any information as to what signals could be useful and what signals could not be useful. And so you have to create the universe of them and then you have to feed them all into a machine learning model. And what we do find is that once you kind of do that, the performance is not as striking. You basically have these machine learning tools are effective, but they will give you an outperformance compared to the market of maybe, I don't know, 5 to 10% per year, which once you start introducing also implementation cost and all the aspect related to market impact for different trades, shows you that some of the promises of these tools may not be as outstanding as people would argue. And I think it also other aspect that I think is very important is that there is a little bit of this narrative out there that you can feed a machine learning or AI model anything, right? So if you think about OpenAI, that you would say, okay, look, we basically got the whole internet kind of Reddit and
whole library,
all the library, every single piece of information out there, we fed it into this foundation models. And look, we have large language models that are pretty effective. And to a certain extent, you can feed a lot of this information. These tools are designed to discard information that is not relevant. Right. So some of the signals that may not be relevant, but this is not as powerful as people would expect.
So still rubbish in, rubbish out. You need to look at what how do you feed your models, what are the input data, what's the objective?
Exactly. So you have to be kind of careful and very thoughtful about what we call feature engineering, right? So trying to feed your model the kind of the right amount of inputs in the right proper form, because if you don't do this, you're going to have that they will be able to extract some signal from all the noise that there is in the data, but they're not going to be as effective right. as you would want them to be.
So your research is in essence also cautionary tale for people using AI and misunderstanding these models.
The research we have is basically informing all those asset managers like pension funds or endowment funds that are sometimes kind of investing in hedge funds and so on and so forth that may kind of advertise phenomenal returns. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't go for those. What I'm saying is that you should be very cautious as to what are the kind of the signals that these hedge funds are using or some of these other investment managers, because you should not be expecting this incredible returns going forward, even though in the back tests that they present to you, they will show very, very large outperformance compared to the market.
So AI is, of course, a very hot topic, also in the financial services industry. Now, if I was a chief investment officer of an asset management firm, if I would have to build a strategy around AI, what would you advise me?
I think that the crucial aspect is to be cautious in making sure that you kind of are very careful about backtesting, making sure that you try to eliminate all the look-ahead biases that implicitly we all do whenever we go and use historical data to kind of train our models, and then be as complete as possible. Like, try to make sure that you are always preparing for the worst case scenario and not necessarily pick the one model that has performed extremely well because maybe of a couple of trades over a certain period of time.
Well, Alberto, thank you for sharing your insights from your research. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and looking forward to reading some future research on AI going forward. Thank you.
Thank you so much, David. Thank you.